Blog Talk Radio.
Get in there. Hey, 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 get in there.
No.
Look at those. Oh, Danny. Hey. Somebody got you say, wave to everybody. Look at your sister. Say hi, niece. That's niece. Woo! Welcome to our house tonight, baby. Here we go, man. Thanks for hanging in there. Nice Pod Sports Show with my man, Peyton Jones, representing Bones Jones Sports. We're going to do this thing hard for 60 minutes. What's up, Peyton? How you doing? Danny Spaulding, Sherry Sweeney Smith, thanks for hanging in there with me. We got Gerald Wisniewski hanging on the line, man. Tonight we're going to talk about the MLB races. How about them first place Phillies? How about it? That's right. That's right.
Oh, the Phillies.
The Phillies. That's right. Come on now. Yeah. Now I got my co-host riding with me tonight down here in the basement. Say hi, Madison. Yeah, say hi to Peyton. No, you're not going to say hi to him. You guys so he can hear you. We're going to talk Hall of Fame. Peyton's going to talk about T.O.'s speech down there in Chi-Town. Gerald's going to come on and talk a little NASCAR. We're going to talk NFL preseason injuries, and hopefully we can get into a little bit of college football since we got a strong college football contingent. What's up, Danny, man? We missed y'all too, man. Look, Peyton says hi, Madison. Hello, hello. She's out. She gone. Peyton, what's up, baby? Talk to me.
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. And it's like riding a bike, man. We've been going for a minute, but now we back at it. We're going to make this thing happen, man. Yes, sir. Back bigger and better than ever, baby. Let's bring on Gerald down there. Hey, Gerald, what's happening, man?
Not much. Just watching TV.
Just watching TV. Talk to us, man. What's happening in the big world down there?
Not much. Hot and humid.
Oh, man, I think that's everywhere, man, that and thunderstorms. Yeah, man. So you said Chase Elliott won the race today?
Yep, we got Hendrick his 250th career victory.
Man.
Wow.
Okay.
And he drove the wheels off of that number 9 Camaro.
Yeah, I agree.
He did? What was the running order?
First and second, it was Chase's first, then second was Martin Truex, then third was Kyle Busch.
All right, third is Kyle Busch. So really no change in the standings then, right? I mean, it feels like it's been so long since we talked about this stuff. I don't even know who wears where, what's what, and, you know, what's left, what's right, any of that good stuff.
Well, if you give me just a sec, I could possibly pull it up real quick. Let me pull it up on my NASCAR app here. And, Rudd. I can't just give me issues right now. But from what I've seen on TV, Kyle Busch is still leading the points.
Okay. I thought Harvick was leading the points. Okay, Kyle Busch is up there. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
all right, man.
But with this win today, Chase has secured him a spot in the playoffs.
Oh, that's right, because he won a race. That's right.
Yeah.
It's like a one,
the 5 card link, the last 20 or 25 laps between Chase and Martin. Martin would get within one car length of Chase, and Chase would take off and open the gap to 5 car lengths, and Martin would come back, close it to one. Those two are battling it out for the last 20, 25 laps.
Okay. All right.
But Martin just couldn't catch that that number nine.
Couldn't run him down today, huh?
No, he tried though. There's a couple times I thought Martin had Chase.
Yeah.
Right after he crossed the checker to win it, he ran out of gas. Chase ran out of gas. Jimmy Johnson had to push him back around.
So how many races we got left before we get into the playoffs?
I think like five or six. I'm not sure. I know mm-hmm. next week they're going to be in, Michigan?
No, that is huge.
They're going to be, I know they're going to be in the hills. I don't know if, yeah, it's Michigan, I think.
Michigan?
Yeah.
You laugh at that.
But, yeah, and they were talking about this yesterday, too, that Clint Bowyer, he had a fire under his car.
Oh, wow. So did anybody fail post-race inspection today?
I didn't hear of any. And then, you know, at Watkins Glen, you know they go in backwards.
Yes, yes, that's right, they do, yeah.
Chase came in for a pit stop. I think it was a tire changer, but the jackman had dropped the jack and told Chase to go, and the tire changer slid across the hood, fell on his rear end on the ground, and then got up and did like umpires were doing baseball, made the safe sign. But I know there was some pit road penalties. Benny Hamilton got one for loose equipment. Kyle Busch had trouble getting gas into his car. And I think Kevin Harvick got one for too many men over the wall before the car got into the pit stall.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, it's unfortunate. I appreciate you giving us a call and giving us an update. But I swear, man, NASCAR is just dying, man, just dying.
It is. I agree.
Be honest with you, I had no clue there was even a race today.
only way I found out there was a race on, I was watching the Infinity race yesterday just because there was nothing else on. And that's when they said that the race was going to be on today. I'm like, okay, whatever. And I really didn't come. I really didn't catch it till the last stage.
Yeah. Hey, you got anything to add on that?
Nah. Not really. I don't really have anything to comment on that. Great.
That's pretty much it, right? That's pretty much how it goes, man. They're gonna have to do something to bring it back.
This battle between Chase and Martin, that was a heck of a battle.
I'll have to check out the highlights to see what it was, man, because I'm really disappointed in NASCAR. I thought there's a lot of different angles they could have went this year to drum up some interest, and they're just fading. Man, F1 Grand Prix, people are more interested in that than anything else, man. But again, man.
And
yeah.
Oh, not a problem. And I can hang out with y'all for the hours if you want me to.
Sounds good to me, brother. Sounds good to me. All right, man. So hey, Peyton, man. Let's talk about some things, man. Let's go to the MLB. I feel like we don't give the MLB a lot of love on our show, man. Let's go there, man. The trade deadline was amazing to me. I was really impressed with some of the teams that made deals, and I was really shocked that a couple of teams that didn't make deals. I'll start with Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay did real well. and getting rid of players and stocking, man. They pretty much got themselves a whole new outfield with the addition of Tommy Pham. They got Austin Meadows from the Buccos. They gave up Wilson Ramos to the Phillies, which I think is one of the better under the radar moves that happened on trade deadline. They moved Chris Archer to Pittsburgh, and I thought Pittsburgh did a good job in getting a setup man to go with Rivera. I think he goes by Rodriguez now. I think he changed his name to Rodriguez. He used to pitch for the Nats. Now he's closing for the Bucks. I thought the Keola kid from Texas was a good pickup for them. Chris Archer, I think he's going to do well with Pittsburgh. And the reason why I'm a big fan of that trade is because that trade puts them in position for this year and next year. Like Pittsburgh, they got hot. They got on a nice little run there. They're starting to fade out a little bit. St. Louis put it on them this weekend. They very well may not make the wild card this year, but at least the trade they made gives them some good position, you know, to be competitive next year. And the same thing with Tampa Bay. Then we talk about what your squad did. And upon further review, I kind of like the moves they made. It seems like they gave up a lot in quantity, but maybe not that much in quality. So that bodes well. I think Kevin Gausman has a really good chance of being good. You know, his first outing was okay. I think, you know, switching leagues, he'll have an advantage. I think as they go, I think he'll be good, man. But it's just amazing to me how tight the NL is, right? The Phillies got a game and a half lead. They have the biggest lead out of all the division leaders. Isn't that crazy? A game and a half.
Oh, I know it. That's crazy.
That is crazy right there. And I'm going to tell you right now, man. Yeah. I've been saying this all year, and I'm going to stick to it. Man, I don't think the Dodgers are going to make the playoffs.
Man, at this rate, I don't know if they will or not, because, I mean, you got the Diamondbacks. They're still in contention. Rockies are still in contention. And that's a team right there that really surprised me that didn't really make no moves at the deadline was Colorado. I figured that they would – I figured they'd make a move or two to help beef up, you know, their team, you know, make a run for the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks to try to win the division or secure a wild card spot. And they were silent deadline day, so
I was surprised at that too.
On the Brewers, they were another surprise for me too, because sure they got Jonathan Scope, but they really needed to address their starting pitching, and they were silent on that front as well. So I don't know if they couldn't get the done, or if they just didn't go down that route, or whatever. But the Brewers also surprised me at the deadline.
Yeah, that's a good call right there on both of them. I thought Colorado would try to make a trade for a pitcher, you know. But it's hard to pitch for them and play for them. You know, you got to be a different kind of cat to be able to succeed. I like what. Listen, we skipped over Arizona. What about what Arizona did, man? Diekman, Ziegler, Escobar. Oof. You know those guys. You know those guys can rake. Anyway, and you remember how they started off. They started off real hot. Like, they were the hottest thing going at the beginning of the year, and now they're starting to get hot again, and that's what we're rolling into. We're rolling into the desert tomorrow night for a three-game set with them, and they took it to us in Philly earlier this year, 2 out of 3. I like what they did, but you're right. I thought the Brewers for sure were going to make a play for Cole Hamels, Archer, or Zach Wheeler. I was really surprised that they traded for two infielders, and now they just got like a log jam, man. I mean, Scope was playing shortstop the other day. He can play there. I mean, he's a natural second baseman. They traded for Moustakas, which, if you ask me, I think that was more – the trade for Moustakas was more of a block, so the Braves didn't get him. You know, I don't know if the Braves need him with their third baseman really starting to hit the ball. I think that was more of a block, because then you come back and you trade for Scope. And that was a good move for them, you know, going forward, because I think he's on the contract for next year as well. But, yeah, man, I was kind of disappointed by them. And going back to Colorado, I thought for sure once Greg Holland got released, I thought that might be a good place for him to fit in. I thought he could go out there and be the setup man for Wade Davis or B closer one A and closer one B. And you saw Wade Davis, he got rocked the other night by Milwaukee. Speaking of the Braves, I think Greg Holland could be a good pickup for the Braves. I just don't know where he's at mentally, though. It seems like he might be a little bit of a head case, and maybe that's why nobody's picked him up at this point. But you know, he's back to throwing high 90s and still has that nasty splitter and breaking pitch. I think that he can help out the back end of a bullpen for sure. Man, I tell you, man, I was a little surprised and maybe slightly disappointed that the Phillies didn't bring back Cole Hamels. I kind of wanted to see that reunion. I thought that, you know, bringing in a lefty, a veteran lefty such as himself, I think that he would have re-energized him, and he could be a big push for them going down. But I mean, when I look at their pitching staff's numbers, I really can't complain about that. They didn't make a move from one, and they got a couple kids down in the minors that they're probably going to bring up to spell some of these guys. But I mean, there's no funner division to watch right now in the NL East. You know, yeah, I'm being biased there, but I think these things are great. I think, you know, I'll say about the Cubs what everybody says about the Nationals. I fully expect the Cubs to pull away because they're the Cubs. I think they're the best team in that division, but Milwaukee's not going anywhere. So that's going to be tight. I like Arizona. I didn't say who I liked in the West. I like Arizona in the West. That's who I picked the whole time. I think I like them. I think that the Dodgers, man, the Dodgers just don't have any pitching. And you know, if I don't know how much you've got to see them play, but they've been on TV a lot lately, and they just played you guys, and you know they took it to you guys. But they are playing a lot of guys out of position, and that's starting to catch up to them now. Like, I don't know if you've seen, like, yeah, they got busted up last night by Houston, man. Bellinger made an error in the outfield, and then made an error basically at first base. I mean, it was kind of tough. The ball hit the bag, but I mean, sooner or later, when you have so many guys playing out of position, that's going to catch up to you. And I think the Dodgers are seeing that now. And I think that's why Chicago is going to be able to pull away from Milwaukee. One, Milwaukee doesn't have the pitching, but they're going to end up playing guys out of position, man. You know, and that's going to cost them. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's okay if you got one guy like Ben Zobrist, right? Ben Zobrist plays everywhere for Chicago. He's about the only guy that does that, but he's been doing that since his Tampa Bay days, right? So he's a utility guy. You know, now teams are trying to get cute and trying to make other guys do this, man. And I just, at the end of the day, I just don't see it working out. And then, like, all the shifting and stuff, guys are out of position. They don't practice it. It's hard for them to turn a double play when they're in these shifts. I mean, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun coming down the stretch here in all these divisions. I tell you one thing that's been impressive to me. I'll come back to you, Tom Harpster. I saw your comment, and I'm going to touch on that as well. But I think what's been impressive to me right now, Peyton Jones, is how the Red Sox are owning the Yankees in this series right here.
Yes, yes.
Where'd you go? You're cutting out on me, bro.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you fine now.
Yeah, I said that has just been one crazy series, man. And I'm telling you, baseball is just a weird sport, man. I mean, you have the craziest things happen in baseball to one team or to one division, and then the thing out of the ordinary, out of the box, you know, it just happens because the only reason I can explain is it's just baseball, you know.
That's how it works. It's just baseball. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
That's how it works, you know.
And that game's going to be on tonight on ESPN. I don't know the pitching matchup, but I hope somebody throws at somebody tonight. I hope they keep that fire going, and I hope the Red Sox stomp a mud hole in the Yankees too. I hope they get that sweep. I really do, because I think the Yankees have lately been exposed, and I know you remember at the beginning of the year. And when we talked about this, and I said the Yankees weren't going to make the playoffs, clearly I'm going to be wrong on that, and that's fine. They won't win the division. They will not run down Boston unless Boston loses Sale, you know, and everybody else. You know, like, it's going to take a complete collapse from Boston or injuries to derail them, and I don't see that happening at all.
They're
but,
on a Sunday night baseball game. I got the pitching matchup right here for the game.
Good. But who is it tonight?
It's Masahiro Tanaka for the Yankees, and it's David Price for the Red Sox.
Ooh, that's a good matchup right there. David Price, he spun the ball real good against the Phillies last week, but the Yankees own him, though. Or is that more in New York, though, when that happens? So that's going to be a good one tonight. I think the Yankees have been exposed, you know, and I said from the beginning of the year, you know, their starting pitching was not built to last. You know what I mean? They really don't have a good starting staff. You know, Severino, he's come back down to earth. He's been rocked his last five or six starts. CC Sabathia, you know, if you're pinning your hopes on him, okay, go ahead. But you remember last year, he didn't even pitch more than five innings in the playoff game last year. You know what I mean? And so I get when they were all like, we need starting pitching. And I love the trade of Zach Britton because I think, there you go. If these guys are going to be able to last five innings, whatever, now you got arguably the best bullpen in baseball, number-wise, says the best overall. And, you know, you got another closer down there that can get you three or six outs. And, you know, listen, Cleveland, L.A., they've shown the way that's how you win now. You know what I mean? It's not your ace going seven, give it to the setup man and give it to your closer now. It's let's get five or six out of you and then let these bullpen guys come in and get outs and that's how we're going to win. So we'll see how it goes. We were talking about the Pirates earlier. Tom Harpster, he's a big Pirate fan. He was saying that he likes the moves that they made because the Buccos bullpen is now set up for a few years, and I agree. And I thought they paid a little bit of a price there, Tom Harpster. I thought that Austin Meadows and the pitcher they gave up, I thought that was a lot for Archer, but I understand to get somebody like Archer, you have to give up a lot, especially with his controllable contract. So I really like that move on both sides. You know, Corey Cagle, he's all over the Sox. Go Sox. He talking to you. He said the Braves need a prayer. That ain't right, Corey Cagle. That ain't right, man. looks like our man might be fresh back from Vegas. I see Toby Wilson checking in with us on the live feed. What's up, Toby? How you doing, man? Man. You know, what can we say? Houston Astros, they're still the cream of the crop. Would you agree?
I'd agree with that.
Yep. And the NL Central, that's just a joke, right? I mean, Cleveland's going to win that by default. There's nobody even remotely close.
A couple of days ago, it was, I think, the Twins. They had a losing record, but they were like 10 games out of first place, you know, behind the Indians. I think the American League Central, I think it's Cleveland's. They just need to go ahead and call that and put the rest of the teams in that division out of their misery.
There it is, right? We're calling it.
Right. They should just go ahead and call that division and put the other teams out of their misery. There's no chance the Twins come back. The Tigers and whoever else is in that division, they just need to – and the White Sox, they just need to shut down and just go ahead and put Cleveland in the postseason. So
right. There it is, right? That's pretty much what's going to happen. And, you know, I tell you what's really turning into an interesting race, that second wild card out there between Oakland and Seattle. You know, and it's a funny thing, like you said, right? It's baseball, right? You can't explain it except for it's baseball, right? You know, Toronto went out there and put it on Seattle. And Oakland, Seattle, they're neck and neck to overtake it. I would like to say Seattle's gonna hold them off, man, but I just don't know because we talk about Seattle every year, like okay, this is the year, you know, maybe when Robinson Cano comes back, he'll be enough to get them to the postseason.
And keep in mind, if I say you touched it on the money there, you know, Robbie Cano being gone 80 games for his PED suspension, they played very, very well without him. So that's one thing that's really caught my eye. And plus, I think at one point in the season, the Mariners, they led the AL West there for a little while over the Astros. The Astros started running there a little bit.
I think at the beginning they were up there. The thing that impresses me about Seattle is what you just said, how well they play without Robinson Cano. Because I thought for sure once that came down they were going to fold, and they just took off. You know, and so I hope I hope that they're rewarded with a playoff spot because of that. And it's funny because, you know, he can do whatever he wants to help them get there, but he is not eligible for the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me to my next point, and I'm gonna segue into this because, I'm not happy with Houston, with the trade they made. I'm not happy with them that the fact that they traded for Osuna. And I say that strictly because, you know, they state in their club policy, their team policy, that they have a zero tolerance for domestic violence, right? So you go out and you trade for a guy that was suspended for all this time for domestic violence, you know, whether it was alleged, whether it happened or not, right? And
right.
they released a statement about, you know, their domestic violence policy and how they have a zero tolerance policy and this and that. But that policy only applies to current players. So that's why they made the trade for that guy. Are you kidding me? I posted that article on my group page too. And I posted it on purpose because I wanted to see who was going to respond to it. And I'm going to go somewhere else and come back to it because when someone posted the article about Jerry Jones' comments and Stephen Jones' comments about how, you know, if you play for the Cowboys, you got to toe the line, you got to stand for the anthem, right? Everybody right. and their mother came out against Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones and, you know, said this and said that. And to me, that was pretty funny because no one ever says anything else to anybody else's teams or nobody gets on the NBA or anything like that because the NBA has a rule that everybody has to stand for the national anthem, right? But no one says anything about that. And then as soon as Dak and then Zeke come out and say they don't have a problem with it, then they're called Uncle Toms or, you know, and this and that, right? And I laugh because Jerry Jones' statement is nothing different than what he said last year. He said the same thing last year that, you know, if you play for the Dallas Cowboys, it's our policy that you're going to stand for the anthem, right? But now this year, Stephen Jones says it, you know, and maybe the way he worded it, maybe that's what rubbed people the wrong way. My only problem with what they said is that they shouldn't have said anything when the NFLPA and the NFL is in discussions on trying to figure out what this is. But I find it highly hypocritical of people that jumped in on the page and all these other athletes that are saying that Jerry Jones has a slave owner mentality and this and that, right? And I laugh because you know this, right? I mean, listen. If you can help the Dallas Cowboys win at one point in time, they were signing you, right? I mean, come on, let's look at it. Greg Hardy, right? I mean, the list goes on and on, right? But, and I can say this as a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, right? If you understand Jerry Jones and you understand the people that he's helped and what he's done for players on the organization, that's why I took great offense when people jumped on it and said that this and that, because it's like, okay, you're right. He didn't do anything for Dez Bryant. You know, he didn't do anything for Rolando McClain. He didn't do anything for Randy Gregory. He didn't do anything for Michael Irvin. He didn't do anything for anybody that's been in any trouble or anything, right? He never did anything for any of his players. He just has this bad mentality. So that's what was kind of funny. But going back to that, it's amazing to me that we can jump on the anthem, but yet we don't say anything about domestic violence. And I say that to you because we all come from a woman. We all have mothers, right? Some of us have wives. Some of us have daughters. Some of us have sisters, right? So we're all on the anthem and this and that, but nobody, not one person commented on the article that I posted about the Houston Astros and how that may just divide their team. Because do you watch the MLB Network at all by chance? Do you get that? Do you watch that at all?
Yes, I watch MLB Network a lot during baseball season.
Did you see Chris Rose the other day on Intentional Talk? Did you see him going at it? Not at Cliff Floyd, but when Cliff Floyd was the co-host with him. Did you hear and see him? Did you hear what he had to say at all by chance?
I caught some of it. I didn't catch the whole thing, but I caught some of it.
Oh my gosh, he was on fire, and everything he was saying was right. And he was saying that he is so disgusted with baseball. He's so upset with our sport because Houston Astros made this trade. And what he said was, he was like, "How is AJ Hinch gonna look his daughters in the eye, and they ask him, how could you make that trade for that player, Daddy?" When you put it like that, right? You know, for me, that has a lot of meaning. You know, I have two daughters, and I've been married to my wife for 15 years now, right? I've known him for half my life. And the biggest pet peeve for me is that I can't stand any man that puts his hand on a woman, right? That, to me, that is the worst thing that can happen to somebody. That's just my personal opinion, right? My show, my opinion, that's it, right? And that's my whole feeling about this Osuna trade. They could have traded for
Archer, anybody.
They could have traded for anybody to help them close them games. I understand you wanted to get rid of Kendrick. Hell, they could have signed Greg Holland off the street, right? He was free, right? I really just don't understand how you come out and say you have a zero tolerance policy against domestic violence and then you trade for that player. You know, and the owner's like, well, you know, I met with them, I talked with them, you know, I got what I wanted to hear from them. Okay, listen, I understand that in sports it's a bottom line business. It's all about the W's, right? But I just have a hard time with that move right there for the Houston Astros. And a lot of people feel the same way. And maybe it gets blown over, you know, maybe it doesn't take anything, but I mean, there was a lot of guys in the clubhouse that didn't like the trade, and now that guy's going to be part of the team. You know, I listen, that one thing right there could derail them, you know what I mean? Like Justin Verlander, he just came out and said, you know, you don't understand why we made this trade, you know, like, why do we do these things? You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wishy-washy. Maybe I'm asking too much from the sports world to really take real-life issues into account, and maybe that's on me, but I just think that the way the world is going, how we're so sensitive to everything right now, that needs to be taken into account, I guess. Maybe I don't know. I find that highly despicable by the Houston Astros organization to make that move. That's just basically what I'm trying to say there. I just think that you can't have a zero tolerance policy against domestic violence and then come back and say, oh, well, that really only applies to the current player. So Peyton, you're the starting second baseman for Houston Astros. You and your girlfriend get in an argument, and let's say you push her, right? She cites domestic violence. You're gone from the Astros. But this guy can do whatever he did to his wife prior, coming to the team, and then come to the team and play. That's, you know, it just doesn't seem right. Am I missing something there, or what?
No, I fully agree with you, man. In that situation, I think the Astros made a huge mistake, and I agree. I agree with what Chris Rose said on MLB Network. I mean, how can you go home, not just $50, but like, look at your entire family, guys, have a conscience about you, too, if you made a trade to a man who committed domestic violence or something. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
That's just, I mean, I've always believed in giving people second chances, but I mean, in situations like this, like you can't take that chance. You just can't.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just comical, you know. And that just slides right into one of our topics, right? That just slides right into the Urban Meyer discussion, right?
Yes, sir.
I find it highly hypocritical that a lot of people, well, not a lot, but there was a lot of people were feeling the same way that I was feeling and sharing the same thing. But I find it funny that a couple of people were like, well, you know, you're calling him a dirty coach. How is he dirty? And I kept asking them to explain to me, how is he not dirty, right? And I know Danny Spaulding was following that thread. And that was just kind of funny to me. It's like, if you know anything about Urban Meyer, right, and his track record, you know, he's not different from any other coach or any other big program, right? I'm going to say all these programs are dirty. Some of them are just a lot better at hiding it. Ohio State is one of the dirtiest programs ever. It's always been that way. In basketball and football, it's been that way. Urban Meyer is a dirtbag as a coach. So for people that are listening and maybe don't know, right, and maybe you don't even give 2 cents, Urban Meyer played a big role in Aaron Hernandez being able to play football at the University of Florida. Now, that man, let's let that man rest in peace, but he was gang-affiliated. He was in so much trouble before he came to Florida that Urban Meyer was a big reason why that kid's records got sealed and nobody could know exactly what he was into. The Patriots, for crying out loud, didn't even know everything that he was into beforehand because of that, right? Let's take this for example, right? So Zeke Elliott, right? You remember the problems that he had with that girl and all that, and the big fight that he went through to be able to play and end up getting suspended for the 6 games, right? Does anybody remember what Zeke said last year under oath about what he did at Ohio State? He took. Coach. Right. There was a kid that was suspended for getting an altercation with his girlfriend at Ohio State. There was another kid that was accused of domestic violence, but that kid was able to play. So Urban Meyer has a bad track record of telling the truth and not telling the truth. And when this whole thing first came out, right, it kind of reminded me of the Jerry Colangelo situation, right? You know, where the fake burner accounts, you know, oh, my wife was responsible. These are her accounts, right? So he possibly couldn't know. As soon as this woman said that she texted all the wives of the Ohio State coaches and texted back and forth with Urban Meyer's wife, how does he not know about these allegations, right? Because that's what they are, the allegations, right? And apparently this lady has pictures, and the police are going to be able to back up that she was abused by this man, you know, and he's saying that he never abused her. But you know what I'm saying? So, and Peyton, here's the funny thing about this to me. The guy, he's holding, Corey Cagle said he's holding the left side of his chest awfully hard. the funny thing to me about this whole thing, right, is that Urban Meyer fires this guy Smith for violating the custody agreement or the agreement, right, because he dropped her son off at the house as opposed to meeting in a public place. So let's forget about the times that he beat this woman, he choked this woman, threw her down. Let's forget all about that, right? You know, he's going to ride with me in Florida. He's going to ride with me in Ohio State. But, oh, wait a minute. He dropped the son off at home. He's supposed to meet her at the mall. He's got to go. like seriously, if we're telling that story, we couldn't even make that story up, right? So I'm calling you out. I had Kevin Waters. I had Stephen Weatherby coming at me talking about he's not a dirty coach and I'm making stuff up and I'm spreading stuff. And I'm laughing because I'm reading these articles and I'm reading how not only did Urban Meyer possibly violate Title IX, so did his wife because she's a nurse for Ohio State. And she knew about the abuse and didn't report it. So dude comes out and then says at the media day, no, I didn't know nothing about it. Then he released a statement and said, yeah, I messed up. I did know about it. I reported it. Okay, so Urban, I'd invite you to call us 646-668-8083, but I'm sure your attorneys have advised you not to speak about this. But Urban, we really want to know what's the truth here. Did you know and did you report it? Because no one's showing on the record that you reported it. Now, I'm sure by the time it's all said and done, somebody at Ohio State's going to come up with a record that says, oh, yeah, Urban reported it, right? So to me, it feels like right now their investigation is more of a negotiation to get him bought out. I agree, Danny. Of course he knew. Absolutely right. And it's just like, I mean, it's just like there's so many good articles out there on this that really breaks everything down about, you know, why he should be fired immediately. And it's like because it's a clause, and I was trying to explain to somebody, it's a clause in his contract that if he's ever made aware of domestic violence and doesn't report it, he is to be fired. And I think you can look that up in an article that I posted that from Brett Murphy, I think his name is the one that did the interview with Smith's wife, and it's all in there. I mean, this is one of the best informational scandals that we've seen, you know, because every time something like this happens, you know, you always got to wait for the facts to come out. There are so many facts that have been presented in these articles. So anybody that's questioning why he's dirty or if he's not dirty, just read the articles. Just go and read everything that there is to see about it. And I believe it's Cagle. I think Cagle's been posting some good stuff. And I think Jared Cash has been posting some good articles as well. I know I put a few out there as well on our different pages and groups and stuff to show this stuff because it's just amazing to me the depth that this could possibly go. And it's setting a bad precedent. And, you know, this is just as bad as the FBI scandal on the collegiate side to me. And I said it in the group, and I'll say it right here live on the air. Urban Meyer is the worst coach morally in the NCAA that we have right next to John Calipari. And I'll challenge anybody, anytime, anywhere to prove me wrong on that. Those two guys are the scum of college athletics. They represent everything that you wouldn't want your child to be around, and yet parents are still sending their kids to trust them with these men. I don't get it. But anyway, moving on from Urban Meyer and his derelict, you don't think someone, like, listen, I like this one. You don't think someone in the police force didn't call him, let him know what was going on? I'm sorry, but the police and the football coaches are in constant contact when players or staff are involved. That's Danny Spaulding. Absolutely, Danny. I absolutely agree with that. When you're a high profile coach like that, there's no way that you're not being notified. It's just like Bud Kilmer, right? Remember the sheriff's department was always calling Bud Kilmer when Tweeter was still in cars and running around town in Varsity Blues. It's the same thing. Yeah, Phillip Small, I got that. I posted an article about Bobby Petrino today about how he's the worst NFL coaching hire ever. But yeah, man. So that just kills me, right? So enough about that guy. So then we got into it, and when I was asking for topics for tonight's show, y'all, somebody had brought up T.O. versus the Hall of Fame. It was Sean James Harrison, and he said that the Hall of Fame is being just as petty as Terrell Owens. And I asked him to go on about that, and he said because they could highlight him, they could mention him. But they chose not to, so they're in regards, they're being just as petty as T.O. I said, okay, so I took that and I thought about that, and I'm going to have to respectfully disagree. I think the Hall of Fame committee has handled this T.O. situation perfectly. I think that he got highlighted enough, and if it were me on the Hall of Fame committee, I would have admitted him. I would have admitted him from everything. I wouldn't even have mentioned his name. I think what he did was his choice, but I think it was disrespectful to the Hall of Fame and disrespectful to the Hall of Fame class that he got elected with. Because I will say this, if I was going into the Hall of Fame last night, I would be a little disappointed that my Hall of Fame induction is tied with Terrell Owens. And I say that because he's coming out and saying that, you know, it's not about him. It's about the Hall of Fame committee and the writers about how they're not aligned. I heard his speech, and I like some of what he said. But if you're going to make a stand for everyone else, then you have to appreciate everyone else that came before you. I hope I'm making sense there. You cannot now say, well, I'm taking a stand for everybody that didn't get in the first time, you know, or whatever, when there's guys previously in the Hall of Fame that didn't get in the first time, right? So you're disrespecting everybody that's been elected to the Hall of Fame. You're disrespecting your peers that got elected to the Hall of Fame class with you, and then you're looking like the selfish ass that everyone has said you are, and you're just proving everybody right. Now, again, I will go back to it was his decision, and he made that decision. And the one thing that I will give him credit for is he stood by that decision. And I'm sure that wasn't an easy thing to do. But at the end of the day, when I'm listening to these guys' speeches last night, when you hear about Jerry Kramer talking about the contracts that they had to go through back in the day, when you see Randy Moss standing up there and he's talking about how he's coming back to West Virginia and how much he loved playing in Minnesota, and I was glad that he went in the Hall as a Viking because I think that's very important to Minnesota because Minnesota seems to be forgotten for a lot of things when it comes to football, which is another story in itself. But he's got the names of the victims on a tie that have died from social injustices. And you hear Ray Lewis up there. You know, you got to take Ray Lewis with a grain of salt. But I thought Ray Lewis did a good thing last night. I thought he went on a little too long, and I thought that he was preaching a little too much. But I was glad to hear that he mentioned what happened in Atlanta. I was glad that he owned that. And I was glad that he made reference to how much that changed his life and how that changed his course. I thought that, and I don't know if a lot of people caught that last night in the speech, but I thought that was good. And Brian Dawkins was just amazing talking about his battles and everything. And I think that's the part of the Hall of Fame that I think T.O. missed. And I think that's where my stance comes from. Now, I'm a just be quiet. I'm going to let you talk, Peyton, because I know you wanted to talk about this. So we got about 14 minutes left. It's all yours.
Man, but now, I don't blame, T.O. for wanting to do, the kind of the Hall of Fame, at Chattanooga, because that's where he got his start. And he wanted to go visit, friends and family, and he wanted to do his own thing. I respect him for that, but, I also at the same time agree with you, You got to show up to Canton and, just out of respect for your fellow Hall of Famers, And I felt like if he wanted to take, like a true stand, he should have done it right there at Canton, But him doing the Hall of Fame at Chattanooga, here in my, about 20 minutes from my hometown, from my house, man, that was just special for the city of Chattanooga, because now, we got a guy who played his college ball here at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, and he's now in the Hall of Fame. And he wanted to come to Chattanooga, where he first started, and celebrate going into the Hall of Fame there, where he got his first, where he got his start playing football. So now he's wanting to, and he wanted to end it by going into the Hall of Fame at the place where he started. And I think kind of as a local Chattanoogan, I think that's kind of, kind of a special tribute to us. And then today, T.O., he's today, one day after getting elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, he was in, the Chattanooga area working out at South Pittsburgh, Tennessee for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders for the CFL. At 44 years old, undergoing a tryout one day after being elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
That's amazing in itself. I saw Jared Cash posting stuff. Here, quick fact, man. I used to live in Red Bank, Tennessee, man. True story.
Hey, so you know a little bit about the area then, man.
A little bit. Worked in Chattanooga for a little bit. So I am very familiar with that, and I understand the significance of that because I've been up and down Usher Raymond Boulevard many times, so I understand how proud people are of people that come from Chattown. I get that. I just think, and it's something that you said, if you really want to make a stand like that, then the place to do it is front and center at the place that you're protesting, meaning that he could have made that same speech last night, and I think it would have had a greater impact. I think when you do things that are wrong, but for the right reasons, as he said, it's better to do it in the place that you are as opposed to far away, because nobody put it on TV, so you have to go to YouTube to find the video, or you just have to wait for the quotes and stuff like that to really get the full impact of what was said, right? I don't know, man. I mean, listen, this young man has forever and will always be his own man. He marches to the beat of his own drum, and there's something to recognize about that, right? I mean, he's, in a way, maybe in some kind of ironic, type of way, it would have been weird to see him at Canton. Because at the end of the day, when you really think about the man and the player, T.O., are you really surprised that he decided not to go to the Hall of Fame?
No, not really.
Right. I think that's probably the general consensus from everyone. No one was really that shocked or that taken back by it, but more like, wow, like, the wow factor was like, wow, he's really going to do this. Like, he's and that's right. Like, and this is what we're talking about. Like Phil Schmoe in the live feed, T.O. should have been there with the rest of the guys. Jerry Kramer waited all those years, and I didn't sense any bitterness in his speech. Corey Cagle's still an Urban Meyer. He said he's buying an Urban Meyer no shirt. It's on the way. Kegel, he's something else, man. But yeah, but Phil, you absolutely bring up a great point, and that's kind of what I was pontificating on earlier. That I think that's where T.O. missed the mark. that I think that you know, you're kind of being disrespectful to everybody else that had to wait, or everybody that got in before. You know, Kevin Dixon, to his credit, he always asked this question, and I never really paid too much attention to it until now. He always asked, does it matter if you're a first ballot Hall of Famer or a Hall of Famer? Because at the end of the day, aren't you just called a Hall of Famer? And
exactly.
That's a good point because really, when we talk about people being Hall of Fame, we don't say, oh yeah, Emmitt Smith, first ballot Hall of Famer. We say Emmitt Smith, the Hall of Famer, or such and such, the Hall of Famer. You know what I mean? And
yes.
To me, now this is funny to me because I really had a problem with this Hall of Fame class. I didn't think, and I'm really starting to get over all the Hall of Fames because I realized that the Hall of Fame isn't what the Hall of Fame used to be, at least to me now. I think that pretty much everybody gets in because I really didn't see how Brian Dawkins is a Hall of Famer. I didn't see how Brian Urlacher is a Hall of Famer. Like, when those guys were announced, I'm like, really? Those guys were getting in the Hall of Fame? Like, okay. You know, they had good careers, you know. but to me, I didn't see him as Hall of Famer. You know what I mean? That was just kind of weird to me that those two got in. And then, you know, I get it that it takes some people a couple times to get in, and others, you know, they get in right away. And, you know, I mean, there's even an argument, like, you know, when you look at the whole body of everything, and maybe T.O. has a point to this point, right? You know, he had to wait to get in, and why? His numbers are definitely first ballot Hall of Famer. So why did he have to wait to get in? But yet, Ray Lewis, he gets in first time, right?
Right.
So you know, so there's some merit there because, you know, T.O.'s never been in trouble outside of football, right? Never. Never. Right? So,
right.
You know,
right.
I get it. I get some of it. But I don't know, man. I mean, the world is a crazy place that we live in right now. You know, and good thing we do have sports that take some of the tension off and, you know, and give us a release on things. But I don't know, man. That whole situation is just weird. And I'm glad it's passed now. And now let's see what he does, right? And meaning is this a one-stop shop? Was this I'm gonna take the time last night, you know, to say this. And the one thing that we should say, you know, if we're being critical, we need to give credit too, because he had his press conference and everything way ahead of all the speeches and everything like that. So, you know, I can't sit here and be like totally 100% negative without pointing out the fact that he did hold his festivities and everything way before the Hall of Fame ceremonies and everything like that. So, you know, if somebody wanted to highlight it and show it somewhere, it wouldn't interfere with the other guys, you know, getting their moments. So we do got to give him credit there. And then I don't know if you watch the NFL Network, but everybody that they talked to last night, like Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, and those guys, they were like, I don't want to say they didn't care, but they said they all wish that he was there, but they're still going to welcome him and treat him like the fraternity that they got treated in. So that's a nice thing too. So that being said, that was nice to hear all those guys say, you know, we're going to open our arms and we're going to welcome him in and we're going to be humble like everybody else before us was humble and welcomed us tonight. But that was nice to hear all them say that, you know, on TV last night in front of the, you know, the microphone in front of the cameras and everything. You know what I mean? You know, listen, Jared Cash, you on that Peyton Jones thing. I saw you getting your little happy fingers and typing, yeah, he ran a 4.38. We expect him to sign a CFL contract soon. So let him sign the contract. What's he going to do? What up, Nate? Listen, he's 43, man. You know, I mean, that's it. He hasn't played football how many years now? You know, one thing that we can always say about him, that man is a freak of nature. I mean, he played through injuries. He played hurt. He always showed up. You know, he made the hyperbaric chamber what it is today. But at the end of the day, go up to Canada and ruin somebody else's team. That's how I feel. You know, I mean, This don't get on the Montreal Alouettes because Johnny Manziel is not going to get the ball, so he likes throwing it to the defense. Oh, man. That's crazy. That's crazy, man. Four picks, man. But listen, I'm actually rooting for that kid, though, because everybody likes a good story. So, you know, I hope that he does, you know, turn around and get to playing better. There's no way that he ever comes back to the NFL, no matter how well he plays up in the CFL. So the best thing he can do is make the most of his opportunity in the CFL, and hopefully that he, you know, his next game goes a little bit better or whatever. You know, and maybe it was a little unfair to expect anything from him. I mean, again, guy's been out of football for a little while. You know, he's the backup. Next thing you know, you're reading through Bleacher Report that Johnny Manziel starting his CFL game tonight. It's like, what? Wait a minute.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, everybody, like I said, I love a good comeback story as well. And like I said earlier, you know, I believe in giving, you know, people second chances based on circumstances, you know, certain circumstances and stuff. And in Manziel's case, you know, I'm giving him a second chance, and I want to see him thrive, you know. I want to see him be successful. And I'd personally like to see him find his way back to the NFL. I know he probably never will, but, you know, just at least have a shot to go back to the NFL by going to the CFL. I mean, you got to applaud the kid for not giving up on his dream. So.
Right. No, absolutely. 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 No, you absolutely have an outstanding point there. But here's the thing, right? He was never NFL material. He was never cut out for the NFL. You know, the only shot that he had in NFL was by staying in school, and he couldn't get his act together to stay in school long enough to get the seasoning that he needs. He's too small to be an NFL quarterback. And I know there's short quarterbacks in there. Russell Wilson short, I get it. I know Doug Flutie played, but he is not in the same class as a Doug Flutie or Russell Wilson. I mean, he doesn't really have that much talent. You know, everything he's a classic example. Everything was given to him on a silver platter. You know, and he was able to do whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, and he never had any accountability, you know, until now. And now is a little late to start being accountable for as a professional athlete, just in my opinion, right? I think that that's something that you should have picked up on when you got booted off the team in Texas A&M, and you had to go into the draft, and then you got drafted by Cleveland, and then you really didn't get to play. Anytime that you show up or you just blatantly miss your exit interview because you might have a concussion, but then it turns out you were hungover, you didn't care enough to show up. I mean, come on, you know. And again, Peyton, that's another guy that gets a pass, right, on his domestic violence too, right? I mean, you know, we're just skating over what he did to that girl, and NFL has yet to punish him for that. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, he's up there in the CFL not balling, and here we are talking about him on Sunday night. How's that work? That's how far he's fallen. He's a topic on a hot sports show. All right, Peyton, man, we closing up on a minute, man. I thought that was pretty funny. I guess nobody else did. What's your final thought for tonight? What's your final thought for tonight, man?
Man, it's been a big week in sports, and, great show tonight. I know we've missed you the last couple of weeks. You know, hope everything's going well for you, brother. And, you know, looking forward to hearing you next week, buddy.
I appreciate that, man. It has been a rough week, man. We'll say prayers for my big father-in-law who's going through some things right now. So we'll say a prayer for him, and we'll say a prayer for anybody else out there that's going through something. My co-host, she hears at the end of the show, so she wants to jump on and get some FaceTime. I'm going to send a prayer to Nita Cook and Raymond Bennett for tonight. I hope the Yankees can pull one out. Oh, you don't want to say something? Because right now, Boston owns y'all. And Corey Cagle gave me $5 to say that to y'all, so I just want y'all to know that's where that's coming from. Stop making people laugh and get on with the show. All right. Madison is telling me to stop making people laugh and get on with the show. So, for me and Madison, to all y'all, we thank y'all for tuning in and watching us on the live feed. Thanks, Peyton, for co-hosting with me tonight. Appreciate it, man. You know how we do it here in Baltimore, Maryland. Get all the way up. Good night, everybody.